also help in this presentation this evening for questions that you might have. But women in development is, women are very important to the LWR board, so much so that they have a policy that all of our programs and our projects overseas, wherever possible, and in fact they would like it in everyone, there would be a portion of that project set aside to help women and to be aimed at women. I've termed women the beast of burden in the third world. They, of course, and we'll have some overheads in a little while, and you'll see how much time they spend working. In fact, I see many of you here tonight are in that category, of course, and women provide two-thirds of the man hours, excuse the phrase, used in the world of work. Two-thirds of the work hours are done by women, and yet they receive about 10% of the pay, and they only owe 1% of the world's property. Huh? And of course, here it's quite different in the North, but certainly in the third world it isn't. And particularly concerned to LWR is the status of women. Did you have a question?
No.
Is the status of women. A friend of mine from India said that no country can be considered developed if it's based on the status of their women. Huh? If the status of women is a measure of development, no country is developed. And he's right. Give you an idea about women. The first time I went to a small little dusty commercial town 260 miles east of Bombay, a town called Jamked, I arrived. And this little hospital that we support and that does a great job with women, and I'll talk about that later, but there was a pall that hung over the whole village, it seemed. And I thought, surely someone much beloved had died that day. But what had happened was that there were two births that morning. But unfortunately, both of them were girls. Unfortunately, both were girls. And Dr. Maybelle Arole, an Indian Christian, told me, and she and her husband run this hospital, and they're both our physicians, told me about helping a woman by cesarean operation deliver the first live child that she had in 11 attempts. And when Dr. Maybelle Arole brought this child to give it to her mother, and said, "You have this beautiful baby girl," the mother kicked the child down to the foot of the bed and said, "What do I want it for?" And the life of a woman in the third world, therefore, is such that we in LWR strive our very best to provide programs and projects for women. When I was in Chile, I guess it's now maybe 2 years ago, I shall never forget two incidences that happened. One was actually in Peru. Let's talk about Peru first. We started a little kitchen that mothers could feed their children, probably the only decent meal they would get during the day, breakfast. And the biggest problem we had was to get mothers to come and help make that breakfast. Why? Because their husbands didn't want them out of the house. They shouldn't be out of the house. They should be in their house doing whatever women do, you see. And so we had to go and talk to husbands about permitting their wives to go and take care of the kitchen. And in Chile, I was at a luncheon that was held because I was there, and the three highest officials in the village hosted this luncheon. Huh? One was the Methodist pastor whose project we were supporting. The second was the project manager in whose house we were eating. And the third was the highest Chilean official there, and that was a sergeant in the police, who was the local sergeant in the area. And after lunch, after they said how happy they were to have me there and all that, and then I have to respond, I said what most of us would have said. It was really a lovely meal. It was guinea pig, as I remember, and potatoes and carrots, and it was really delicious. And our man in at that time, Dr. Hans Hoyer, who is now in Africa, but at that time he was with us in Latin America, he translated for me, and he knows that if I say something that shouldn't be translated, he should change it and make it acceptable in that culture and in that society. But anyhow, I said, you know, this has been such a beautiful meal. I'd like to ask the three ladies, the wives of these three officials, to come out here so that we can at least express our appreciation. I said, not only was the meal beautiful, but you ladies are beautiful. You know, we do that at Ladies' Aid. The women always come out in the kitchen. And Hans Hoyer translated that. The police sergeant, and there were only about 12 in the room, 12 of us, the police sergeant immediately stood up, unbuckled his belt, his gun belt, and stood next to his wife. The guy whose house we were in went into another room, bedroom or something, came out with a shotgun and stood next to his wife. And the pastor immediately jumped up and grabbed his wife. And I turned to Hans Hoyer and I said, what are you trying to do, get me killed? You know, you see, male chauvinism so rampant in South America that these men had to express their concern about their wives in this fashion. Hans told me later, he said, Norm, they loved it. The women liked it, and the men really liked it too, but they thought they had to do this in order to protect and maintain their honor. Women in the third world who bear the children, who make the meals, who fetch the water, who gather the wood, who do the hoeing and very often the harvesting, are forgotten. And the literacy rate, for example, among women in Niger is around 2%. There's a UN, I think this is a UN document, it may not be put out. The World's Women, a profile by the Population Reference Bureau from in Washington, I believe. But you take a look at some of these statistics, and one has to be absolutely amazed. Here's adult literates, female. In Africa, 28%. And those are just rough figures. In Asia, it is 43%, not bad. Whereas in Western Europe, it's 99%. And if you were with me when we were talking about water, you know how important it is to have access to clean water, but it's also extremely important for women to be literate if you want to do something about the birth rate. And I've got a slide that's on here already, very quickly, just to show you. There you have, on the far right, female literacy rate and its relationship to infant mortality here in the left. And you notice in Afghanistan, where it's the lowest, maybe 10%, has one of the highest infant mortality rates. And it's directly related between literacy and infant mortality, and that also means you can translate that into birth rates. And so LWR is concerned about teaching women how to read and how to become literate, because we know it'll mean something in terms of birth rates. Let me show you another one.
At the same time, are you also doing some education for the young children, boys and girls.
Oh, yes. We're, about what? Illiteracy.
Yeah.
We do, not directly, because there again, we suspect and hope that the schools of the district will do that, huh? Therefore, we really are concerned about people from 12, 15 years of age and older, if we're going to go into it. Janet?
Sometimes if you educate a mother, you educate
yep.
a family as well.
Hear, hear.
Yeah.
Here's a little one that shows you the division of labor in Africa. Women in Africa do up to 3/4 of all the agricultural work in addition to their domestic responsibilities. And there you see women, it doesn't show up very well on this slide, unfortunately, but you can see that this is the woman work. This is the male work. So they do 30% of the plowing, 50% of the planting, 50% of the livestock, harvesting, weeding, processing and storing crops, and domestic work. You have that kind of situation about women in Africa. Here's another one that shows you, again, what women do, again in Africa. And there maybe you can see it a little clearer. So my sister Marge asked the other day in another context, if women spend 70% of their time growing food, why does AID, Agency for International Development, and most PVOs, why do they train men? Why is it when they have a course, we'll say at the University of Kansas or something, they send a man instead of a woman? Well, that's changing, I'm pleased to say. And we are sending more and more women to training. In fact, in Africa, as well as in Latin America, we're training women not by bringing them back to the States, but by training them, giving them training right in their own area and bringing people to them who can hopefully give them something that will be useful. In Niger, again, to use that country, we have done a lot in storing of food by drying the food. And you just dry it right out there in the open because the sun is so hot. 120, 125 degrees is not uncommon. And they can dry their tomatoes and they can dry other vegetables that they might have for later use. And you can see how much education each gender gets, male or female. And again, it's the men who get the predominance of non-formal education.
Norm?
Yep.
Just a brief words on why do you think this situation has developed so commonly worldwide?
No, but maybe my sister does. She's the expert in this area.
Usually it comes from patriarchal societies and holding all the leadership positions. And women are property of men.
Yeah.
And they're classified. Well, even in the Ten Commandments, where does it say, you shall not covet what?
Your neighbor's wife.
Right. House or his cattle?
Yeah.
Or anything that is your neighbor's. So, the idea that women are property of men mm-hmm. and can be used and treated the same as the burden. But I suppose it also comes from the division of labor where men were the hunters and gatherers and out after game in the United States. And if they were agrarian, then the women had a 10-year food class. It's a long time to come.
You know, the interesting thing I experienced, as did my sister and my wife, and when we were in Budapest 1984, I think it was, at the 7th World Assembly of the Lutheran World Federation. It was interesting, and maybe my sister doesn't recall this, but there were two candidates at the end for president of the federation. One was the Bishop of Hungary, who many people saw as a communist, and the other was a woman from Denmark, God forbid. I say that sarcastically because colleagues of mine, friends of mine from Indonesia, Malaysia, Singapore, Southeast Asia, here they were on the horns of a dilemma. Do you vote for a communist or do you vote for a woman? Goodness gracious. Huh? Well, the communist won. He isn't really a communist. He happens to live in a communist country. He's the bishop of the Lutheran Church. He has subsequently died, unfortunately. But, you know, and I asked some of them, I said, well, why did you vote that way? You know, couldn't help it. Had to. Couldn't possibly vote for a woman, huh? Their culture wouldn't permit that to happen. Go ahead, Bob.
There's a prime minister of India now is a woman, right?
Oh, yeah. Of Pakistan.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not only that, but the prime minister of Norway, Gro Harlem Brundtland.
England.
Yeah, Bulgaria, I think now, or one of those countries down there. It's Bulgaria.
What I was going to say is that Lutheran World Federation meeting, I was particularly proud of the African women. Who could forget how they came to the microphone so bravely and spoke against apartheid and against some of the things that are happening in the world? These women were very strong leaders. I think the one that came from Liberia was a lawyer, wasn't she? Anyway, they did not sit back at that World Federation meeting. They were there.
Interesting. The African women are totally beautiful. If you measure them by their statuesque, they carry these big birds on their heads, so they develop this marvelous posture. They're very regal. And while they work very hard, I don't think that, you know, they work from dawn till time they drop off.
Yep. They surely do.
And yet they show a great deal of happiness and self-esteem.
Yeah.
But I think that they value education. And I know the missionaries over there trained the women, as Jan said. And then the women teach the children. And the men come in and sit while the mother is teaching the children. And the men get value from that, too.
Yeah. We're not concerned. Yes, Bob.
Yeah, no, I'm sure that you're aware of it. Maybe these other people aren't. But literacy rate in Tanzania, at least, is quite high. And I think part of that's due to this Operation Bootstrap, this Pastor David Simonson does. And my wife and I, we got involved in that. And he's built schools and, of course, hospitals, too. And it's really working.
62 and 31.
Ones, yeah. You know, sooner or later, it's going to be.
Yeah. You know, and it isn't, we're not just trying to give women material things. I'd like to take you again back to India and Maybelle Aroli and her husband Raj. The Arolis, they have taken illiterate village women and have made them village health workers, to the degree that these women can take care of about 80% of the diseases and illnesses that are common in an Indian village. And how have they done that? They've taken them and trained them by pictures and word, of course, for 6 to 8 weeks, so that the woman knows that the white pills in the blue bottle in the upper corner of her medicine kit, will do this or that. And the salve in this bottle will take care of skin rashes, and the ointment here will take care of eye problems. And that's fine. And we love that. And what started with 40 villages is now in over 400 villages. and how one of these village health workers told me that she had not had a child die in her village in childbirth in the last 5 years. But more important, these women will look you straight in the eye. Very uncommon for Indian women who, when they see a man, and particularly a white man, they'll always look down and talk to you and answer your questions. They'll never look you in the face. But these women look you straight in the eye and they give you answers. And I remember one particularly. I asked her, and she was talking to a class that maybe was twice as large as this. She was explaining the Aroli method, which I've called it, on how to train illiterate women. Now remember, these can't read. And they go back to their villages and train those people. And they are selected by the women. The Arolis don't say, you're going to be the village health worker. The village decides who's going to be, huh? And one of them has been lifted up in her dignity to such a degree that the village wanted her to run against the mayor of the village, who had been a mayor for the last, nobody can remember when he was anything but the mayor. And this would have been a great loss to this man, huh? As far as face is concerned. And when he saw that was going to be a possibility, he went to Maybelle Aroli and said, look, if this lady will not run against me this time, I will retire and resign within 6 months after the election. And that's what happened. And in 6 months, this illiterate village health worker became the mayor of a rather large village. Anyhow, I was asking her, she was talking this, and I asked her, how were you before you got this course? And I can still remember her, and I can't do it because of my age and lack of dexterity, but she put her feet up on her chair, huh? Like this. Put a robe over her head, huh? And then sat there shaking, huh? Whenever she had to do anything like this. What a transformation. And that's what Lutheran Word Relief is about with regard to women. We're not interested in just feeding them, clothing them, and all that kind of stuff. Sure, that's important. But we're more interested. Let me just read to you for a minute something I just got today in the mail. This is from our East Africa office. And one of the projects I was fully aware of was in Mombasa. It's called Tototo, T-O-T-O-T-O is the name of the industry. Tototo Home Industries. Huh? Tototo Home Industries provides training and technical assistance to rural women's groups to help them establish income-generating village enterprises such as bakeries, corn grinding mills. Tototo's successful training method is geared at teaching non-literate people about group dynamics, problem solving, business management, project engineers, project planning. And there are several others on this board. The point is, for example, in Bangladesh, we have gone to the bank because the bank wouldn't loan a woman anything. But they would, of course, loan Bob or anyone else a male money. So we go to the bank and say, look, we'll give you $5,000, $10,000 as guarantee if you will loan women the money. And then they pay it back, you see. Then the bank doesn't care because they have nothing to lose, they think. But I'll tell you this. The rate of return by these women after they get the loan has so impressed the bank, huh, that they've said, we don't need your money any longer. This is now about 7 years later. Huh? We don't need your money. We know these women, when they get a $50 loan or a $25 loan, they're going to pay it back. What a change. Not only you see among the female community, but among the male banking community, that, hey, women will pay back. And those are the important things that, you know, we think are more important than teaching women how to count and all how to get a loan and how to get interest. Another thing, before we see the film, I'd just like to say this, that, you know, many parts of the world, women, and it's true here, I know, women will do the same job as a man and get a half or, you know, a third, two-thirds less than a woman, than a man. In India, a common laborer's wage is about $1 a day. A woman doing the same work, road work, repairing a highway or something, will get half of that, which is hardly enough for anybody to live on. I'm going to stop. Maybe you have some questions. And maybe, Janet, you want to say anything about the women in Thailand? You were there. I was not.
I think an area that we sometimes forget about are the refugees that still continue to be living in refugee camps in Thailand. Those refugees that come from Laos, from Cambodia, and from Vietnam. I just was in that area in January, and there was one woman that I won't forget. She came into the leprosy part of the hospital the day that we came, and she was very, very upset because she had had to cross the border. It had cost her $3,000 to come, which is a tremendous amount of money that her friends had collected so that she could get some care, because she knew that in the camp, where a lot of our American friends and other country people, our doctors are working, that she might get some help. I was very proud of the young woman that works for Lutheran World Relief, who is considered just a legend over there, working for this in the sanitation area. She put her arm around this woman with leprosy like this and asked to hear her story. And here she was. She was losing her fingers. She was beginning to really show, you know, extreme cases of leprosy, extreme symptoms. And in this camp, they're able to arrest this before she would maybe lose her whole hand. And so she had made this tremendous trip across, and it was very nice to see that she was received with that kind of love by someone that we helped support. It made you feel good. I know the film takes a little bit of time, but when I went to Niger with Norman, we were looking at wells and things like that, and when we came back into the village, the men all surrounded him, and there was not a woman in sight. But I saw a little girl, about five, with a can of water on her head, so I went over to see her. And in a few minutes, I was surrounded by the women of the village. And it made me realize sometimes you need to have a woman along on some of these trips because they identify with us, and it's very important for them to have that opportunity. Now we're going to see a film on the quilting. Some of you maybe have quilting in your own towns. The group from Edison is a group that I started. It's an ecumenical group. I started in New Jersey when Norman was starting his first year at Lutheran World Relief. He was gone for 200 days, and I started it for my own sake as much as for what ended up for everybody else. But I started in our neighborhood, and I have Jewish and Catholic neighbors, and in our quilting group that you'll see working here, over at least half of the group are not Lutheran, but they're helping us make quilts. And this year we made 180. I'm sure some of you make more than that, but I'm really proud of our women who are helping other people in the world. You want to go ahead with that? Or?
Yeah, and I would just say this, that you know, this is women in development, we call this, but it's really women here in the United States also that are playing a very important role in the overseas work. Making kitty kits, you'll see them making soap, making quilts. And if any of you are in a church that hasn't got a quilting group, I would suggest you start one. I discovered when Janet started this that, sure, LWR last year sent, I think, 364,000 quilts overseas. Huh? 364,000. So we get a lot of quilts. We really, I won't say this too loudly, but if you'll understand the context, we really don't need them. We do, because we need them, send them over. And they're great to have. But I discovered in Janet's group the value it is to women here in the United States to know that they are doing a real service, and believe me, they are. That no matter what their age is, no matter what their economic status is, they are making a real contribution to their sisters overseas. I have a letter, I think, in this group. Let me see if I have it. I'll read that very quickly. Again, from a friend of ours in Niger, who writes, "I thought you might be interested in one of the stories of one of the blankets. I met Bita Bata, a young widow with four children, while I was in the area of a small off-season gardening. Because the village women had asked for blankets, I requested and received 100 blankets from LWR, and included them as part of the project. Bita Bata did not receive a blanket because she lives in a small cluster of houses about a half a mile from the main village where we distributed the blankets. One day while walking into the garden area, Bita Bata and her friend, whose husband is deaf, came practically begging for a blanket. I could hardly refuse, so I took them to their home and gave them a few blankets I had in the truck. A few weeks later, during the cold season, I was at their home visiting them when Bita Bata came out of her mud hut. I knew she was in pain when she could hardly greet me. Wrapping her blanket tightly around her head and her body, she sat in a wooden chair. She seemed almost delirious from what was obviously a severe inner ear infection. We talked a while and I offered to take her to the doctor, but she refused. That's when I noticed her blanket was torn. Then, with a closer look, I could tell it had been taken apart. I asked her about it and found that she had taken the LWR blanket apart to share with her four children. I could hardly contain my emotions looking at this very sick woman, realizing what she had done. Tears came to my eyes as I thought of why I had really come to Africa and how something like a simple blanket could be so important to a person in need. The next day, I went back to check on her and took her another LWR blanket. As I go back now occasionally to visit Bita Bata, she looks quite different with that big smile when she greets me. Those blankets could very well have saved her and her children's lives, or at the very least, made a life intolerable to most Americans a little easier. I told Bita Bata that a Christian woman in the U.S. made the blankets because they wanted to help others. She thanks you very much. Donald Bowles." I know Donald, he's a Baptist missionary in Niger. Let me turn on the TV. Oh, Ed's here, and he'll turn it on for you. And you'll turn your chairs around.